right. Hey, guys, welcome back to another show of Mandated. I am your host, Selwyn Robbins. And as I always say, it's a pleasure to be speaking with you once again. And as I always follow up, I ask you the question of how you are doing. Man, I just have to tell you, it's a pre-conversation to that I was just having with our guest today. Just speaking about where we are today, I have to tell you, I'm doing pretty good in spite of everything that everybody's going through. I'm still being very prayerful and being very faithful in everything that's happening and not letting the wind steer me in that, but trying to make sure that I'm a steady anchor for everything that's going on. So with that being said, man, I have an awesome guest for you today. You already see him, but you don't know his name. I met him a few years ago. I want to say back in 2015. Mm-hmm. Yes, 2015. This was for an event that he was having at a very awesome namesake school, which was the Barack Obama Male Leadership Academy. And he was leading that group of young men, a very diverse group of young men there to a better future. And I have to tell you, the guy that I'm speaking to here, he's inspiring me. He's putting this thing back in my mind again. So gentlemen, please welcome Nakia Douglas. Brother, how you doing?
I'm good. How you doing, sir?
And I'm well. I'm well. You can see I'm smiling as big as you. Just you
yes,
know,
sir.
I'm trying to keep it going.
In spite of everything.
In spite of, man. So I want to ask you this, you know, as I was just posing to our listeners, I always ask how everybody's doing. So I want to ask you that same question. How are you doing today?
You know what? I'm doing good. In the midst of all these times, mm-hmm. it's helped us reprioritize life, be still. And just kind of hear God and the beauty of what he's done. He's actually slowed me down some. It sped up to slow down. And see my wife happy, to see the kids happy, to be able to have time with them prior to the pandemic. It's been awesome, honestly.
That is awesome, man. That is awesome, man. And I know I'll speak it from the male perspective in leading a home at this particular time. To some degree, I can tell, or I'm sure that there has been some kind of burden on your shoulder on how do you do this thing correctly for your wife and your kids?
Yeah, that's the truth. When we talk about the burden of just let alone being a man and then being a father and a husband as well. Mm-hmm. It has created more opportunities to learn. It's built mm-hmm. Additional layers of character that I don't think we've utilized in a while. You know, just simple things. You know, I'm operating from home now, and mm-hmm. this was something I would never envision for myself. But to be able to become a short order cook, I prepare breakfast, I pack lunches, I drop kids off. I pick kids up. moments in time that I never had growing up because my father wasn't in the home. Mm-hmm. And I'm thankful for it. I'm thankful for the flexibility with my job and mm-hmm. The innovative of God blessing us with a strong team to do this work. But more importantly, I'm thankful for God just slowing me down and instilling me again to see and hear his power and his grace upon my life and the lives of my family and friends.
Amen, amen. So with this, in regards to the family, Ms. Gloria, Zaire, and Zamaya.
Yes,
and I want to use a word my wife loves to use, and it's called a lens. From the perspective of somebody's lens, through your sight, what kind of conversations have you had there in the family? And what things have you seen that may have changed or not changed, you know, for them?
Something as simple as being able to go on walks. My wife and I have lived in this home for 18 years, and we brought Zaire and Zamaya into our forever families 4 years ago. And all this time prior to the pandemics, we've never walked through our neighborhood and just been at peace and just, you know, experienced God at his purest form. And to be able to do that with my kids, with my wife occasionally, we walk the dogs. It's been powerful. And then, you know, to fast forward back to the house, you know, I have a garden now. I used to always think I had a brown thumb. And we have spinach, all types of lettuce, tomatoes, things I never did before. But I did it for the kids and honestly found greater joy in it. And as I've done it with them, it's almost like I did it for a time with them and God utilized it for time with him.
Oh, man. And, you know, that's been a big thing that many people, households have had to focus on is that now that we, for lack of a better word, have become compressed in that we have to now stay home rather than, you know, the parents being out of the home between 10, 12 hours a day.
Yes, sir.
Everybody's home at the same time all day long. And I'm sure, you know, anything that's under any kind of stress or whatnot, you know, could be some issues, things like that. But I believe it did force us to recognize who we are as family. Man, and I sure hope everybody has taken advantage of that. So in regards to family, you have another family here in regards to these young men that you've been mentoring for years. And this even was even pre-BOMLA through Amacio Smith. I believe there was another school, if I'm correct. But now today, you are the executive director of TRIO at UNT Dallas.
Yes, sir.
And through that time that you've been mentoring these young men, and I'm sure young girls just as well, what are you seeing change in their awareness of society today?
You know, everyone says everybody's woke now. I've seen that for years. And in some instances, it was our ability, it was our purpose as educators that we are enlightened and awaken the spirit within the minds of our students. So it's been a joy for me, but more importantly, it's been a joy for me to watch from a full contextual lens of the entire world being awoken. When you have those moments of stillness, again, you know, the travesties that have happened within our community have been going on for centuries. And so when we think about it now that the whole world is acknowledging it, is looking at the systemic challenges that, you know, we face as African-Americans and as minorities in general, and they're hearing it and seeing it and studying it for themselves, there's a new awakening. The beauty for me as an educator, I get to do that every day. From being a kindergarten teacher and those students coming in as sponges, not knowing, you know, what learning could be, and sparking that light within them, to now within our McNair Scholars Program, where you have those first generation college students that say, I think I want to be a doctor, but I don't know how to get there, and helping them on that trajectory.
Yeah.
Seeing that entire gamut of experiences for students, for their families, and for the community is the best gift that I think anyone can receive.
But, you know, let me add this in there. When I first met you at the event, I didn't realize it until today as I was reviewing that was my first time ever being in an all-male school.
Yes, sir.
And reflecting back on that, I remember the tour that you had taken me on throughout the classes and seeing these young men. And I believe we ended in the auditorium, or I know we at least went there. But you had talked about all the kids, young men being in there and just having that male leadership come in and speak to them. You know, my mandate is to make sure I'm creating an avenue for young men and men alike, all men alike, to find their better self. This is not about them doing anything wrong. It's just that we all want to do better in some things somewhere in our life. So as I reflect back on these young men that you've been mentoring, dude, I have to say it's great because I saw such a discipline, not a strict discipline. It's just a discipline in being on time, dressing alike, having communication is so key. Those skill sets, those small little but very important skill sets to take us or take them where they need to be. So tell me, in this time that you've been with these kids throughout all these years, what's one of the most inspiring things that you've seen them do, you know, from day one when they came into the classroom to when they graduated?
Yes, sir. Growth and development from, you know, just to put a play on words, from boys to men. My first experience with a lot of those young men, I was actually in 2011 when we first opened the campus up. But I got to meet several of them throughout the course of the development of the campus and as we were initially recruiting students. And to see them now having, several of them having graduated from high school. The first two graduating classes from the high school have now graduated from college. And so these boys are now literally men. A couple of them have children now. And so, you know, when I see them, they're like, you know, this is your grandchild. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. But witnessing the growth and development, when I travel now in my work, I always talk with the counselor, find out where the students are in school. And so I'll try to take time to either go by and have a meal with them, a cup of coffee or tea, or just to check on them and to see and hear their mentality. And then when they give you those words of edification, thank you for doing what you did. I didn't realize it now, but I appreciate it. I didn't realize it then, but I appreciate it now and how it's been beneficial. And I'll say probably one of the most transformational and defining moments for me was last fall. One of the young men's father passed away, and you know, he was one of the founding parents, one of the founding families of the school. And when I'm walking into the service, I see one of the other moms, and so the parents were there supporting each other. But the mom told me, she said, "Look at that, Mr. Douglas." I said, "What?" She said, "Look at what y'all created." And there were brothers there, about 13 of them, that had come together with their one brother to be there with him in his moment of pain, in his moment of, you know, of loss. It was powerful. And these were brothers that came from all over the state of Texas. One brother's actually, brother attends North Carolina A&T. He flew in for the service. That was the definition of brotherhood and what we were hoping to build beyond academic growth and support.
And man, literally I'm getting goosebumps on that because I'm picturing that very thing of we, even to today as adult men, we strive for that brotherhood in some form or fashion because it's always needed. That just because we become adults doesn't mean that we stop the relationship or the connection that we need. You know, man, that one hit me there. So growing up, you had mentioned in an article about your mom sacrificing so much for you and your sister.
Yes, sir.
How did all of that play a role in your own household today?
You know, when I think about my household and I think about, you know, even my work, but before I got to be physically a father, you know, I was a father to, I consider my sons and daughters of those young men and young women I've been privileged to serve throughout the community. It's almost like God was preparing me for the moments that I'm having now. And what they say, that the greatest gift in life is to see, to receive those gifts, and or for future generations within your lineage to receive those gifts. Again, a story. Zaire and Zamari come into our lives December 15th. And, you know, they're here with us. We moved them in and, you know, we got them in school and they're at Park South Y and going to Charles Rice at the half day program.
Okay.
And that summer we left them at Park South Y for the summer camp. And then one day my baby girl comes home and she says, "Daddy, tight as this. And I look, I said, "Hold on. It's only three men you talk about in this house. God, your brother, and your daddy. Who is this Titus you talking about?" And then my son walks in like, "Oh, Daddy, she talking about brother Titus from Obama." Titus from Obama learned how to swim because he wanted to be a part of the rowing program partnership that we had with White Rock Lake.
Titus,
he didn't enjoy that program, but he kept swimming and became a certified lifeguard. Titus taught Zaire and Zamaya how to swim.
So again,
you never know when you're going to get those gifts back. My children are in DISD now, Dallas ISD now. Well, when they get to the school, My son and daughter come home one day and say, "Daddy, you know everybody?" I said, "What do you mean?" And they walk in the classroom, the teacher see us, said, "Your dad is Mr. Douglas. Your dad is Mr. Douglas."
Uh-oh.
And legacy. My son was like, "Yes. Like, you know, your daddy used to be my boss's boss." But again, those gifts that are being given back, because, you know, I believed in the work that I was doing with my principal, believed in the work we were doing in the community, mm-hmm. with the students. And mm-hmm. to now see those gifts being given back to my kids, mm-hmm. that's the greatest joy ever, because that means the work and the labor was not in vain. Mm-hmm. And not only is it beneficial for my kids, but it's beneficial for all kids.
Oh, man, for sure. And one big thing that my wife and I are focusing on now, everything that we're doing has to have a foundation set on legacy.
Yes, sir.
And maybe 2, maybe 3 years ago, that just really started resonating with us, is that we need to make sure that whatever we're doing now, we can, if not duplicate, pass down to our young men and to our young girls, because their whole world is changing rapidly. You know, we're kind of settled, you know, where we are, but their whole world is changing, and it's, man, so much is happening for them that they need everything possible.
Yes, sir.
To set them up for success, as we say at our work, set the next person up for success. So that means for us, you know, taking that extra time and pushing yourself a little bit more, putting things in play so that when the next person, man or woman, comes in, they can hit the floor running. They already know what to do because we put things in place and in motion for them. Right. Man, you know, I think about the family my wife and I have. We have total, 4 kids and grandkids, and all of them are doing great. You know, and I tell her, you know, one of the things that I'm going to love one day, whenever it is that I get to sit at the head of the table and I look down both sides and I can see all my kids and grandkids.
Yes, sir.
I say, okay, I did something right, you know, in there. Because I want to see that joy that I have, that excitement that I have, any kind of information or knowledge, you know, passed down, and see that it's about to come up in their time. So, in this time, I want to hit on this real quick. And I told you we'll talk about this. Now that I have your attention, man, that video, and I've seen a couple of them, was very captivating. Actually, it made you pause to really stop and think about where we were. So this video was for our listeners, WFAA here in Dallas created a series called Now That I Have Your Attention. And this was 6 months ago, roughly. And this was at a time that COVID was really peaking. And also the social unrest with the recent murder of George Floyd. And Not yet. Okay, no problem. Well, let's speak that. That's been on my mind. I wanted to make sure. But Mr. Douglas was part of that series, and he had talked about, once again, the things that were happening he was seeing from his lens. So, Nakia, if you don't mind, there was a time in that video where you were crying. And, I want to come from this perspective here, is that as men or as young boys, we are taught not to cry.
Right.
But you cried, but you didn't just cry. It was on national television, right? But you didn't shy away from it.
Right.
I want you to add to that, in that moment that you were feeling the pressure, you said you actually had to grieve. You grieved at that point. Go a little bit further into that, if you don't mind.
You know, I've been woke. I've been conscientious about, you know, our heritage and legacy of a people, you know, all my life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to have been omitted from textbooks, to be omitted from history, and having to, mm-hmm. you know, petition, develop policies just to be recognized as a human being, let alone a part of the historical fiber of our country, you know, it's different. You know, we were talking earlier about, you know, Black Panther and everything, and, you know, the kids loving that or whatever. But I went through a phase where it was cool, but it wasn't cool for me. Mm. And my wife was like, you know, why are you doing it? I said, so you mean it took a movie to come out for some people to even recognize or think that they have a lineage from Africa? That's beautiful and all, but that's make-believe. Wakanda's not real. Africa is real. Mm. And where we come from a historical perspective is there. And so fast forwarding to while I have your attention, you know, there was the unrest first and foremost with the health pandemic that we were dealing mm-hmm. with, but the social unrest in regards to literally the world had to be still at that moment mm-hmm. and witness the travesty that happened on a regular block in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And no one came forward, not necessarily just citizens, but the fellow officers to stop this gentleman mm-hmm. from kneeling on this man's neck until mm-hmm. he took his life.
Mm-hmm.
It took that to happen on live TV and to be recorded for the world to just kind of pause and like, they're not just crying wolf.
Yeah.
And so in that moment, when I said I grieved for the moment in time that this still had to keep happening in 2020. On live television and being recorded mm-hmm. for people to see and hear our cries.
Yeah.
And it was a reckoning that took place in regards to, it didn't just happen there in Minnesota, it happened across the country and literally across the world where people started to think, oh, that did happen. Wow, this happened. And mm-hmm. to be in that moment in time, it was heavy. It was beautiful for the acknowledgement, but it was heavy that this was still happening and it was just a commonplace mm-hmm. Within our psyche. And I hate to say it, you know, within our community, we've kind of become hardened to it where it's almost like you just kind of expect it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm 40 plus years old and I still kind of tense up if I get pulled over, you know, because your hope and prayer is, am I going to make it through this ticket?
Yeah.
You know, that's a tough pill to swallow. Mm-hmm. But to see our brothers and sisters, allies from across all races and religions and countries, social and economic backgrounds to come together and to be out there protesting with us and for us,
mm-hmm.
that was a moment in time I never thought I would experience. Much like never thought we would have saw an African-American president. You know, so it's these moments and times that I'm actually living through that mm-hmm. I know my ancestors were praying that their prayers were heard, that their calls were answered. And we are living in a time where we're actually seeing those prayers being heard and those call and the call to action being answered.
With so many movements going on in the spirit of saving lives, you know, and this especially for African American or minorities as well. There's so much to really consume to where in regards to not just the actions, but the movement itself. And it can become very overwhelming to at a point where you say it's like you kind of expect it, but then how long do you continue in a kind of expected mindset to where we now need to take action. And this, and I want to say this very broadly for any kind of injustice. So with that, I want to add this piece in there. Education is key. I know that is your background. So with COVID, with George Floyd, with the things that's going on in the government in different levels right now, how can we bring education to the forefront to make things change, if I'm saying that correctly?
Yes, sir, you said it perfectly. First and foremost, conversations, acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. You know, we're having this conversation now, and what this conversation is going to do for the two of us is a reciprocal process that we're sharing knowledge, sharing perspective, and it's going to make us better. And then when you encompass your listeners and others who may, you know, by way of a conversation and or listening to this on different platforms, it's going to create another line of communication, even more persons going out seeking that knowledge for themselves and or having that conversations with themselves and with others to educate themselves and others about what we're discussing. That's what education is. Education is the sharing of knowledge. It's a reciprocal process. And so again, from being that kindergarten teacher 20 some odd years ago, you know, people used to always say, oh man, you're great with those kids. And I said, no, those kids are great with me because, you know, they taught me a lot about myself and who I was seeking to become, not only as a professional educator, but as a man, and as a father, and as a leader in the future. So I had to have those experiences then to be the man that I am now. My father had to have left when I was 4 years old for me to understand the type of leader and the father I needed to be when I was of age. And so as tough as it is to have gone through those experiences, and you know, you go through those moments where you question why God, now I'll be like, you know, thank you, God. You know, I appreciate that challenge, you know, because I know it's building character, and the character that's being built in me is preparing me for the next journey, the next portion, the next season of my life that he's preparing me for.
Man, you know, that's very key because as you're speaking about investigating education and sharing it,
right?
Because of everything that's happened this year, even more so these last 3-4 months, personally, my wife and I, we love listening to NPR because they have such great stories. But as I'm listening to it, I'm pulling out certain things. So one day they had a conversation about the nuclear race and an organization called OPCW, which that organization, they watch for the proliferation of nuclear warheads, building things of that nature. I've checked in more into what is COVID. I've checked into what is the GSA. I didn't know what the GSA was until this presidential race. Oh, so they're the in-between, the transition.
Yes, sir.
Like, okay, I bet everybody knows about that now. But, and the thing, this is the thing about education in my, cognitive dissonance, it changes it. That now that I have this information, I have to absorb it. And how then do I use it? Because now I'm changed. You know, that very thing that I was educated on or someone educated me on, how now do I apply this to myself? So as you were speaking about earlier, we have those conversations. And who can we have them with? As my wife would say, I love dropping my wife Jan's name in here because she loves conversations. Those conversations are tough, no matter the subject, really, because everybody has their own level of education and what they can talk about, not talk about. So from that standpoint right there, talking about education in your home with Zaire and Zamaya,
yes, sir.
What kind of conversation do you have with them that is bringing or giving them knowledge for where they're going?
So first and foremost, finding out, you know, their loves and their purposes and their passions. You know, every morning before, you know, we all leave the house. Well, I'm sorry. They leave the house.
Right.
You know, we pray, you know, we collectively do it. And then as we're driving in, we call my mom as well, but there's a daily scripture book that we utilize with them. And so initially my wife and I would read it to them. And now, you know, they were at a, you know, they're at a comfortable point. Well, Daddy, can we read it? And then we just discuss it. You know, that's a powerful moment in time. And I used to always close with a guiding question. So how does that impact you? Or what are your thoughts about this? And now when they finish reading it and whoever's reading, well, this isn't what I think about it. And this is what I thought about it. And, you know, it's just powerful. And then, you know, they're after they kind of have their conversation, like I'm not there, they'd be like, so Daddy, what did you think?
Right.
Those are the moments in time that are priceless because again, people that came from my generation, we didn't necessarily get these moments in time with our parents.
Yeah.
Because there was that hustle and bustle of life that, you know, unfortunately we were trying to scratch and survive. And to now have those moments now, to be able to plant these seeds and know that it's going to sprout either while I'm living and or after I'm gone and know that they are equipped and to be successful from a spiritual to a social, emotional, academic perspective, and to think that same way about all of the students and communities I've been able to serve and support, that's reassuring. And kind of like what you said earlier, that's a part of the legacy that we get to lead and live. I love what I do. I get paid to liberate people through the power of education. When we think about it, you know, education, it's not just the formal education. That's why I talked about the stories and the sharing. It's the informal. It's the wisdom that the elders pass down to us. It's the lessons learned, good, bad, and indifferent, from our peers or from our elders that went before us. And so that's why I talked about education being intertwined in everything that we do. You're educating your audience just by creating this platform.
Man.
You know, the conversations you and your wife are having are planting seeds, not only within your family, but within the seeds and families of those that come into your sphere of influence.
Yeah.
That's the power of what we do in our existence. And it's our recognition of each other. It's our seeing of each other and hearing each other and being there for each other. That's going to change the trajectory of where we're headed right now.
You know, in that I'm hearing something else that there's more you want to say. So I'm going to ask you this. What do you specifically want to talk about?
You know, I'm kind of like an open book. So if like you ask a question, I can give it to you. You know, when I think about mandated, you know, again, for the audience that may not know, you know, my dad left when I was 4 years old. My sister was 2 weeks old when he left. And I remember just like yesterday, he said he was going to get some cigarettes. My sister was crying on the bed. My mom was coming out the room. And I just kind of looked at him like, and I didn't say it, but I thought it. He ain't coming back.
Oh, man.
And so there was that, you know, we talk about burdens that you carry.
Yeah.
You know, people don't often talk about becoming a man before your time. Because I'm witnessing him go out the door, and I look here, and I see the tears come out of my mom's eyes, and I hear my sister crying, I just assume the role as a four-year-old that I'm going to be the protector. All right, he's not here. I'll do whatever I got to do. And so that mentality stuck with me even now as a father, as a husband, as a leader, and as an educator. I've kept that same mentality that when those kids in my classroom, when those kids in my building, those kids in programs that I'm overseeing, they're going to be safe. They're going to be protected. Those teachers who I see as, you know, the co-parents with me in regards to serving and supporting those kids, they're going to be equipped to be successful so they can take care of those kids. And so it's a reciprocal, holistic approach to service and support, more importantly, the education of those that are in my sphere of influence.
You know, you touched on something there, the epidemic or pandemic that is of fatherless homes.
Yes, sir.
There are so many men, no matter the color, that have faced that and today actually are still dealing with the residual of not having that role model in that home. You know, I'm a product of that. Me, myself, my two brothers, we all are products of that. And my mom is, you know, has been remarried over 30 plus years. Love my, what society would say is a stepdad. I call him my dad.
Right.
But still, you know, there was that gap of not having my father there and learning to now, as you said, be one of the men of the house. You know, me and my three brothers, mom's is like, look, it's time for y'all to go out there and do this and that and that. You know, when there's a balanced home, you could kind of relax a little bit as a kid. But as you were saying, you know, when that home is not what we would call balanced or perfect, now you have to go into a role that you weren't even ready for at that time. You weren't trained for. So with today, and that's one reason that I'm speaking on mandated, trying to make sure men and young men, wherever they are today, are changing the statistics. And just the other night, what was it? Probably Friday or Saturday night, my son and I were in a discipleship together. So we were talking, and within the book, and this was written by Ed Cole some years ago, and he was speaking about the 61% of homes were fatherless or whatnot. Of course, that has changed. So I said, you know, he's now a new father, me being an old father, I said, but what do you and I do to decrease those numbers? And it's making sure, I have to say initially, is, you know, where we are right now, we're doing the best that we can by empowering, encouraging, strengthening one another and other men just the same, because we're going to go through those hardships, mm-hmm. whatever they are. And, you know, we can only see how hard it is, or we can see how hard it is for the women that had to do that all by themselves. So if we're changing our mindset to say, you know what, dude, I know what it was as a kid to not have that father. I know the struggles that I had when I didn't have that father with me to show me how to be a man. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the statements I have for myself, it's hard being a man, raising a man when you weren't guided by one. Mm-hmm. And today, man, it is so key. So even if I'm speaking to a young guy at work or whatnot that doesn't have a family, I'm still trying to make sure, as you were saying, speaking that wisdom to him. It may not set in right then, but he will have it at that point that he's going to need to use it. So with this, we want to close out, but I want you to close out with words of wisdom for our listeners, men and young women.
That's a perfect segue. The experiences we have in life mm-hmm. are perfectly imperfect. Again, my childhood, the way I was raised, I probably wouldn't put it on, or I wouldn't want some of my worst enemies to go through some of those experiences.
Yeah.
But where I am now, I've learned to appreciate them. Mm-hmm. And so it literally wasn't until my junior year of college that I really started questioning, you know, the real reason why my father left and everything. And just fast forward, just giving you all a quick overview. Mm-hmm. I found out the reason he left because there was a rumor and a disbelief that I was his son. And
wow.
My perception of how he handled it was, it's best that he leave versus doing or saying something to me that could have harmed me and change my entire trajectory.
Yeah.
And so now, hindsight being 2020, I kind of look at it like, okay, God, that was a blessing in disguise that I saw that happening and that I kind of internalized that, because it turned on a switch that maybe wouldn't have been turned on had he been there. It may have been suppressed. Yeah. It may have been pushed down and locked down to where I would have never truly manifested into the man that I am now, the father that I am now. And so I learned to look at life for not only the good lessons that people could teach me, but also for the bad lessons, so that I would repeat them again.
Yeah.
They say, you know, if you want to change history, don't forget about your past. I mean, if you want to change the future, don't forget about your past.
Yeah.
And so I would take all those instances of what I would have wanted or what I thought my dad should have done.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that now with my family.
Yeah.
What my wife would have expected. I do that now with my wife. Mm-hmm. Of what I would have liked to have been taught about manhood, I did that in my schools for my sons and daughters that were part of those campuses.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the flipping of woe is me. No, thank you, God, for putting me through that. Because when we think about the greatest challenges and the greatest opportunities and the greatest experiences and the greatest growth that have happened, it haven't come in times of being complacent. It came in time of great pain, of need, desperation.
Yeah.
We had to call on God when we realized it wasn't about us. It was about him.
Yeah.
And so when we humble ourselves and we're at that broken state, we're going to call upon him. And then he just kind of manifests the entire lesson to us. Like, that's why I had you to go through that. I allowed you to make that decision. And you may have thought it was wrong, but no, it just took you a little bit longer to get there. But the ultimate
thing
that was supposed to have been taught was through your experiences. When we get to that clear understanding, I mean, it gives you a realization that we're all vessels and we're broken in a variety of ways. But how we piece ourselves back together will define and create the ultimate creation. And so it took me, again, my junior year, finding out why he left. And it took almost another 5 years after I graduated from college and I found my faith that I said, you know what? All right, I'm okay now. I'm starting to heal.
Yeah.
But September 25th, 1999, my mother called and said my dad had a stroke. September 29th, I was here. and walked him to the hospital. He couldn't say anything. He had a stroke, tear fell out his eye. And I look up, my mom by his side, and I made the decision to come back home. And all my homeboys were like, why are you doing it? I was like, honestly, I don't know. I'm going to go and try this out. Yeah. But subconsciously, what I wanted that father-son relationship. But as God would have it, that wasn't the case. It was a reversal of roles where I ended up being the parent because I had to put, he was in a rehabilitation center when he first came home. Mm-hmm. And so when I get home for a month and a half, how God divinely prepared it. Everything he needed to learn, I taught as a kindergarten teacher. So I labeled the house like it was my kindergarten classroom. And before he passed, the only thing he wasn't doing was driving. But it allowed us to start restoring, and it allowed me to start healing.
Yeah.
And so you got to be willing to have those tough conversations, those hard situations.
Yeah.
Then fast forward, when I became a principal, and, you know, even more so in my classroom, transition from teaching to administration, it allowed me to heal by way of creating those relationships with other students. And now it's allowed me to heal by the relationship I now have with my wife, I have with my kids, but more importantly, that I have within my own faith.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well spoken, man. That's well spoken. Dude, somebody's pulling something from that for sure.
Thank you.
Mr. Douglas.
Yes, sir.
Dude, thank you so much for your time.
Yes, sir.
Man,
my pleasure. You know, when you call, I'm here.
Man, you've answered.
Your listeners and you and your listeners for allowing me for this opportunity.
Oh, man. Thank you very much, Ben. And I'll say this, whenever we can, let's make some kind of appointment. Just sit down, talk over some coffee, and we just relax. Because honestly, I need the connection. With all the guys that I know, that's what I'm trying to do. So by all means, whenever we could do it, man, by all means.
Let's do it. Iron sharpen iron. And the same way we pour into others, we have to make sure that we're poured into as well.
Yes, sir. So. All right, guys, this is Selwyn Robbins, your host for Mandated Podcast Show. We have been speaking with Nakia Douglas, Executive Director of TRIO at UNT Dallas. Once again, we love you. Be blessed.